It's all coming out soup.
Ready?
Yeah.
New Jersey's legalized marijuana. How about that?
Yeah. You see, Oregon has decriminalized everything.
Really? Heroin, cocaine. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I'm moving.
So the big news of the evening, if you're just joining us and weren't paying attention, is obviously the Rawlings Gold Gloves given out last night. Tucker Barnhart, the Reds catcher, has won a gold glove.
Oh, he won it.
Alex Gordon, yeah. Anthony Rizzo. Mookie Betts with his fifth straight. Do you think that we could, Mike, open the national show and have that first segment be nothing but gold glove talk? Like we just do where we nothing, where we break it down, we call a Rawlings representative. We don't ask why they were doing that last night or if anyone got fired because they did that last night.
Wait, Rawlings decides this and not just like AP voters? I thought it was like the Rolaids relief man. Where it's the AP, but they just attach a sponsor to it.
I think you're probably right. I think there are voters.
They someone has to answer for this.
This is what I'm saying. I'd like to ask some questions about, I think it'd be funny to do a super straight segment to start the national show where we're asking just the most minute of questions regarding the Rawlings Gold Glove.
I know you want to do it as a joke, but Alex Gordon, man, that's impressive. How long is he going to be doing this?
What is it, his fourth one?
Dude,
I think it's his fifth, yeah. The
guy's been incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, Mookie's won five straight.
Yeah, but you understand that. And he's still super young, which is, I mean, shocking to me because Mookie Betts has been good for a while. But Alex Gordon, I thought that guy fell off like years ago, but still defensive stalwart.
I had no idea he was still in the majors. Yeah, yeah.
That's not a joke. Alex Gordon is still in the league?
Yep. He is.
Wow.
Professional hitter, right? I mean,
well, I think he's a free agent, too. He's anyone's to be had right now. Gold glove winner.
I think you guys can discuss this seriously. Also in baseball, isn't it funny that we're still giving out gold gloves, seeing as how most of these guys should just be playing in the field with their bats? Like, they shouldn't even be given gloves. They should just be out there with their bats in a frying pan.
Well, Joey Gallo won one, and I imagine he won it just playing the field with his bat.
No,
I
mean, wait a minute. Joey Gallo?
No, Joey Gallo did not win a gold
glove.
No,
Joey Gallo's on there.
No, you got to be, no.
I'm telling you.
Joey Gallo, no. Who's got more home runs than singles.
I thought he was in DH.
Joey Gallo, right fielder, gold glove.
He's in right field?
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought he was a DH, too. Stu Gotts, can you please look up for me how many times Joey Gallo struck out last year and whether it was more than the year before or fewer than the year before?
It couldn't be more because we had the shortened 60-game season. It's impossible.
Well, then can you just get me some numbers over the last 3 years? It's not impossible for him, Stu Gotts, but I understand your point. He couldn't do it as many times in 60 games as he did it in 160.
Let's be careful and not use up all the good stuff now on our gold glove chatter, guys.
Exactly.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
I think Billy, that you can help us rise up and talk about ideas. Like what can we talk to? I can't believe I actually did that. I wanted a Rawlings representative instead of like a voter, which was it's really stupid. It's been a long night. Okay. Mike just came in and said he was pooping soup.
Right. Gallo had 79 strikeouts in 57 games this year.
So how about before that? How about the year before that? How many times did he strike out?
He struck out 114 times last year in 70 games, 297 at bats. I mean, the guy strikes out every other time. And the year before that, he struck out 207 times in 148 games.
To your point, Dan, I am genuinely confused at how to do this show. And that's not just like the stick to sports thing that's out there. It's just, I feel like everything in the world has changed from the start of my sentence to where we are right now. It is just, this is going to be a nightmare podcast to listen to.
Well, you went to sleep last night, not knowing who won, and you woke up this morning still not knowing who the president of the United States is going to be. And there's plenty of ground to cover here because I did find some things interesting about last night and the way that it sort of felt like sports. John King is a star.
Oh, I think, he's the best ever.
Year in, year out. This guy's amazing.
The idea that he could know all the counties. Most Americans, I'm pretty sure this is statistically so, most Americans can't find all 50 states on a map.
No, but the way he works the telestrator seamlessly while talking to you and putting things in layman's terms, like telling me that Michigan is in the second inning. Like, everyone take
a
deep breath.
He said that a lot.
Second, well, I felt good because baseball games are long, man. I was like, all right. You know?
Was it a doubleheader? Because then it's only seven innings, and that gets confusing.
I am a little frustrated with Wolf Blitzer telling me it's early when I'm on my seventh seltzer and it's 1:30 a.m.
Well, the thing that I kept noticing over and over because of how much I was watching was the redundancy. I actually thought of Stugatz in this regard because Stugatz came up at a time in radio where it was the most normal thing in the world. This isn't the way that we do it necessarily, and certainly you guys call us on it whenever we're not doing totally fresh stuff. But in radio, you used to reset the same damn topic every hour. You used to you used to do a segment 1 hour, and then the next hour you were doing that segment again, and I was watching so much of that last night, especially Stugatz. Once it got past like 1 and 2 a.m. where you're just watching, you realize that you're watching the same people say the same thing a slightly different way because new information hasn't come in, and they're just telling you again and again, hey, the Democratic vote is about to come in here by mail because mail skews democratically.
Right. There's only so many times you can go to Philadelphia and say, here's the percentage of votes. It's mostly Democratic. Here's how many votes we think we have left. If you think he's lost Pennsylvania, you're wrong. You still have to count these votes. It got very repetitive, which I think for me at least is why I went away from it. I'm just like, all right, let me know who wins when I wake up in the morning. We still don't know.
Okay, so you guys are a little bit older, so I'm kind of wondering, Mike, Chris, Roy, Anthony, if you guys experienced the same thing growing up that I did, right? Did you guys used to watch SportsCenter, particularly like in summers when you're home, and watch the 8 o'clock SportsCenter, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and not realize for the longest time that it was just a replay of the exact same SportsCenter over and over and over again? Because I was like, man, they, at a certain point, they're telling the same jokes. I feel like, how do they have the energy to do this 4 straight hours exactly the same?
When I discovered they were replaying taped editions of SportsCenters, no lie, I was in college.
What does us having to be older have anything to do with anything? Because I don't understand.
Well, we were kind of watching the same thing over and over and over and over again. No,
you guys were in the industry, in the biz, if you will, right? And you guys were old enough to know the way the biz worked. We were just, you know, young kids watching our favorites on the Sports Center, and we didn't know, hey, they did this one time last night, and they're just replaying the same thing over and over again for like 6 hours the next morning.
I've often watched the Sports Center. It's like, wow, that joke worked last hour. I guess they're just going to keep going back to that same joke at the exact same time.
I think you're breaking this news to Stugatz. You're probably extending him too much credit.
I mean, we all knew that Patrick Olbermann, it was taped. They just ran it back in the morning. The Feel Good Edition is the greatest thing I've ever heard. It's the late night edition of Sports Center with Kilborn and Brett Haber. It's the best edition of Sports Center. They would run that thing for 5 hours consecutively, and I would watch them up all night. Clark University doing Lord knows what. We all know what I was doing.
I knew that fact in junior high, Billy. It is pretty evident that they were that was a taped episode. And they were playing it over and over.
I mean, well, look at you.
Roy. Like,
some people are smarter than others. I was in college when I realized, wait a second, exact same delivery? What are the odds?
Some people are smarter than others has never been more evident than it was last night.
There is a political topic that I think we can frame within the local hour that we can borrow from previous conversations we've had on this show and Levitard and Friends with South Beach Sessions. I'm going to try to do this nonpartisan. I never quite got the Florida skew and Biden stuff just because I'm in my bubble in Miami where it feels like anyone who supports Biden is outnumbered. And I think that's mainly because they don't feel the need to put flags on their cars or boats or whatever. But as a Cuban American, I kind of felt like one side just sort of ignored the Cuban base. I think there's this general notion that, well, that's an older generation, they'll die off, and young people are generally more progressive. And that's not the Cuban family dynamic. There were all these ads calling someone a socialist and playing up to Cuban American fears that we've gone into great detail with, right? And there really wasn't a rebuttal or any sort of effort to dissuade people from that notion. It's just sort of like, all right, well, just concentrate on Central Florida Latinos. And I think you saw last night that Miami-Dade County now just can't be counted on in terms of a Democratic vote comparative to some other major U.S. cities. And it's because there is this demographic that they just made all sorts of assumptions about and never really made an effort to change things with.
For those of you who do not know, okay, Florida went Trump's way and went Trump's way mostly because of Miami and mostly because of Miami Cubans. Miami Cubans, I believe, I think the latest census shows that we are one of the only counties that is more than 50% a minority. When you see the voting in Hialeah, for example, you know that Cubans vote Republican, and they do so basically because what gets passed down from generation to generation is that Democrats are socialist. And that's what gets waved around, and nothing ends up moving that. I don't know what Billy or Tony's story is on this. Mike, I'm assuming that your Cuban friends.
Yeah, man. It didn't really surprise me because all my childhood Miami friends, for the most part, have been Republican and just more and more Republican. I've had people that maybe voted Obama in previous elections that went like so deep red. It's perception is reality, right? Because you mentioned Hialeah and how they vote. And the platform for Republicans here in Miami-Dade County is you can't vote for the socialists because that's just like the Castro regime. Hialeah is also the number one county in America, I believe, for Obamacare and socialized medicine. There's just no rebuttal. There is no pushback on the notion that they are not Castro's regime. They just sort of take that accusation and pivot to Puerto Ricans in Central Florida. I don't know what can be done there. I'm just saying more if they actually want to turn the state back blue.
I'm thinking that nothing can be done if what you've seen play out over the last 4 years doesn't change your mind as a Cuban. And I don't, Tony and Billy, I am curious because my Cuban friends, the number of arguments and stuff that I have had with family, with people I care about, the amount of divisiveness is crazy. And when Mike says that Cuban families are unusual in this way, you've heard me say, Stugat, that this is a generalization, but that black kids often become a man at 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. American kids, 18, 19, 20, 21, when they get kicked out of the house. And Cuban kids, it's 30. Like, there is a whole lot of passed down, close to the family, unusually close to the family stuff. And those older Cubans have a post-traumatic stress disorder about communism that gets handed down. And I am not excusing the behavior. I'm just explaining it because the number of questions I've gotten since last night about what the bleep is going on in Miami, too many to count.
DK Metcalf was a man at birth.
The interesting part of this, Dan, is the notion that this Democratic ticket is socialist or communist, right? Like, we've seen the political ads here in Miami-Dade, especially hammering home that point, like Mike said. And what would happen if there was actually a socialist and a communist on the ticket? Because that's completely different, because this ticket is not that, right? Like, what would happen to the Cubans if that were the case?
We saw all the ads, the Trump ads living down here on the local channels, and they were very heavily hammering that one accusation of socialist. Be careful, this is Cuba. And I didn't see a single ad on the other side that was just like, hey, I'm not. Just like a 10-second ad. It's like, no, I'm not. Not a single thing. And I think constantly, we do this every election cycle, which is, what's the deal with Cuban Americans in Miami-Dade? If you're still asking the question, that's maybe part of the problem. I think more can be done. I just think that one party has just largely ignored, thinking that, you know, there's just generally a movement towards blue. You see it in Texas. Latinos generally favor more Democratic. That's not the case. Cubans are different. Cubans are different Latinos.
Well, you saw it in Arizona. You saw Arizona Hispanics ended up flipping the vote in Arizona, at least in part, because of that. Because Cubans are different. And one of the ways that Cubans are different, and this is not irrelevant, is We are treated better than any other minority in this country. And the Cubans associate that with the Republican Party. Like, the laws have been different for us in terms of getting us to freedom than they are for any other minorities, Stugatz. And so that's how it ends up happening, because we're just protecting basically the thing that you have happening in this country. We're basically end up protecting, hey, we don't want it to be so equal. It hasn't been equal. So we end up coming out against equality.
I have a question. I said earlier, excuse me.
$5.
I said earlier that Alex Gordon was a professional hitter. He has a career batting average of .257.
Why did you say that?
I wanted to correct you because we were having this conversation under the scope of his defensive prowess.
I feel like Stugatz would just say that about anybody who's been in the major leagues for a while, because it's true. He is someone who gets paid professionally for playing baseball and occasionally hitting one-fourth of the time.
But what is the definition of a professional hitter? It's got to be more than .257, right? Somewhere in the neighborhood of .275, .280, right? Right.
I just think
I don't know why I said it.
I think you got to work the count. I don't know why you said it in response to him winning a gold glove when it's touting the opposite.
Well, who is the
professional fielder?
Who is the representative most associated with? And I throw this to Chris and Billy, because your boy Hollinsworth was given that a whole lot in his big league career. Who's the guy that you most associate with just referring to him as professional hitter? Because he can't be too good. Like, you don't – Tony Gwynn and the great players don't get professional hitter. Professional hitter is a guy who's kind of mediocre, but all he can do is basically – give you a fundamentally sound at bat where he works the count and is incredibly mediocre. Like, he can't be above average, right? Never mind great. He can't. He's just a guy who gets up there and you feel good about him working the count is what.
Slap a few foul.
Like Brett Gardner.
Yeah.
Gardy.
Correct?
I'm actually looking at, like, the year-by-year MLB batting averages just to see what the average batting average is, to see who the – and it's actually a lot lower than I thought. The average MLB average is, like, .253. So, like, maybe he is an MLB average hitter.
But, Chris, that's changed a lot in the last, like, 5 years as all these guys have gone for home runs and allowed the batting average to plummet. Because
it's gone down a little bit. Like, 10 years ago, it was, like, .260. The MLB average batting average I'm talking about. But yeah, so I don't know. I got to figure this out, who the average hitter is.
This is what we should set out to do, because I'm not sure we're going to know who's a new president or same president by the end of the show. But we should, as a show, collectively name the most professional hitter.
Well, this is what I was saying, because, Chris, I'm not looking for the most average hitter. That's not what I'm looking for. And I wouldn't measure that with batting average anyway.
Right.
It's not the most average hitter. It's just sort of like glowed. I don't know whether it's
Ross Glode.
Right.
I was just going to say, coming up with Tommy Hutton, I would always hear about Ross Glode and Wes Helms being professional hitters. And they'd strike out on 5 pitches, but he'd tell me how great 2 foul balls were in that at bat and taking one ball. And I'm like, come on, guy. It's a 5-pitch at bat. This is not something we should be celebrating. But Ross Glode, it has to be someone that's not good enough to be an everyday player. It's usually like a pinch hitter, but like the first pinch hitter off the bench that'll come in like the 6th inning.
Is Matt Joyce a professional hitter?
Man, he's been flashing the leather, though, this most recent year. I got the answer, guys.
Flashing
King of the Mountain. We'll do King of the Mountain style. You knock off the King of the Mountain.
Okay.
Howie Kendrick.
Not bad. Not bad. Glode's batting .281. I don't think Howie Kendrick, and I say to myself, professional hitter. I'm not certain why I did that with Alex Gordon.
He's not batting .281 now. I don't think that
he's been done for some time.
Glode has been done for about 10 years.
So I'm just saying his career average was .281, Ross Glode.
Rick Butler.
Oh, that's a good one.
Wow, that's old.
That's
old school. Wait a minute.
That's great.
Brett Butler was a professional bunter, I felt like.
That's tomorrow's show.
Okay, we'll do that tomorrow.
His career average was .290.
Anyone else do Wes Helms $1? Dollar store Wes Helms, where I'm playing word association. The Marlins got Wes Helms for $1, and it's the only thing I think of when I think of him. I do not think of anything else.
Matt Holliday, professional hitter.
That's a good one.
I feel like he's better,
good.
Though.
Matt Holliday is good. An all-star.
Too good.
So the reason I like Brett Butler is the average is there. There's not too many homers. He doesn't strike out a ton, and he gives you about 170 singles a year. I mean, that's a professional hitter. Yeah.
Wait, you asked specifically, guy that doesn't play every day, comes up with big hits, works the count, somehow a miraculously long career. How is that not Howie Kendrick?
I don't have him not playing every day, this professional hitter. You guys think that has to be one of the qualifications, that he doesn't play every day, but he just comes off the bench as a professional hitter?
I mean, Howie Kendrick's 294 in this era.
That's what I mean. That might be too good for this conversation. I mean, what about Lenny Harris? I know I'm going back to the pinch hitter well, but Lenny Harris, that's a pro's pro. Mm-hmm.
The thing with a professional hitter is it's really just like not a thing that's actually real. It's just something that you throw on someone that you don't know how to describe what they do well. So you're like, that person is a professional hitter. And by the way, this Ozzie Smith, things are looking worse and worse when Ross Gloat has a 20-point higher batting average for his career than Ozzie Smith did.
You're right.
You kind of invoked your inner John King, and now I'm just fantasizing about John King going to a wall having this discussion.
I also think, Mike, that you did something there that really shook my cages in terms of how it is that I have looked at professional hitters all my life. You threw a black guy in there, and I was not expecting that.
Dan, I saw what was going on, and I didn't like it. And I got in there after two candidates offered in there. I'm like, oh my God, we're going to start going Matt Sarah. Someone needs
Is there a woman that we can pick just to make this totally
Dottie
diverse?
From A League of Their Own.
Maybe that's what I was doing with Alex Gordon.
Guys, I just found an article written in July 4th, 2020. And it's Gary Gaetti, the ultimate professional hitter.
That is a good one.
That's a
good
one. I think Gary Gaetti won an MVP, though.
Gary G.
Well, yeah, because you can be too good. Because I keep wanting to think Luis Gonzalez fits his category, but then I go to the pro baseball reference.
He had 50 homers one
He's
year.
Got too many stars next to his name. He's made too many all-stars. You can't. It's weird to say because it sounds counterintuitive, but you can't be a really good professional hitter.
Well, you have to be average. You have to be an average professional.
No, you have to be above average, but slightly.
Right.
Okay. Not super above average.
With not a ton of power. I think that's part of it. Right.
Gappers
and infield singles. Just you get to first base. However, you have to get to first base.
You hit one flush, it goes off the wall.
Like I would say, here's a good one, local too. I would say Edgar Renteria is a good professional hitter. Yeah.
You know who was a professional hitter and then he outgrew it? Christian Yelich as a Marlin was a good little professional hitter. Yeah. And then he blew up and went way past that.
Luis Castillo?
Is a great Luis professional Castillo. Hitter right there. Deep into the count, slap singles. That's what it's all about.
Hold on. These guys are too good.
Luis Castillo?
No.
I mean, Luis Castillo had us convinced that he might catch the all-time record.
Wait a minute. Luis Castillo, Edgar Renteria, and Brett Butler are all too good. When you're mentioning Gloat and Wes Helms as professional hitters.
We've moved off of Gloat.
We've kind of made some parameters here. You can't have too much power. Yeah. You got to bat right around 300, mostly slap singles. Maybe you leg a couple out, and that's it. That's a professional hitter.
Gary Gaetti never won an MVP. He did win an ALCS MVP, though.
It's too good.
Yeah.
I feel like we're playing two different games here. Like I feel like we need to get on the same page.
All right, let's try that again. Let's try again to get on the same page. Again, if you're just joining us, the big story of the day is who's a professional hitter? Who do you associate, much like pornography, I know it when I see it.
Renteria. Would you say he's a professional hitter? Edgar Renteria.
I just said he's too good.
Did you forget the
parameters? Yeah.
Are we doing King of the Mountain? Because I feel really good about Howie Kendrick. I think this is the sweet spot.
Wow.
Is Craig Counsell too good to be a professional hitter?
Wow.
I don't think he's good enough.
No, he's not good.
You can't have that wacky of a – his stance was too wacky.
Now we're doing stances?
You got to have a basic stance if you want to be one of these.
That's a pro. That's a pro.
Chris, I'm glad that you mentioned that. You can't be a professional hitter and have your chin resting on your shoulder. You just can't.
Thank you. How about Jason Kendall?
I like it.
No.
He was maybe too good.
Too bad.
You have to take into account the position, Dan.
He was good as a catcher, but he was bad as a hitter.
He's bending over all the time.
He didn't use batting gloves, though.
Ooh.
That makes you a professional hitter.
It does?
It helps.
That's a positive?
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
I would think that batting gloves, that's an interesting one. Does put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. In order to be a professional hitter, do you have to not wear batting gloves?
I mean, 288 career average playing that position, that's a professional hitter, man.
And if you do no batting gloves plus pine tar, then your batting average can be 10 points lower and it still evens out more or less professional hitter status.
I feel like the dirty helmet is a scrappy hitter. We're not talking about a scrappy hitter. We're talking about a pro's pro hitter. Like this, like you can't have a Craig Biggio helmet and be in this conversation.
I got a scrappy hitter for you, Mark Loretta. How about that?
No, terrible. Just a terrible, terrible nominee by you.
Scrappy.
I want to change the parameters here because the power thing I feel like is a little bit overblown. I think of Jock Peterson as a professional hitter, even though he's got some pop in the bat. Professional hitter Jock Peterson.
Strikes out too much.
I think I have to take back what I said about Jason Kendall because he made a couple of all-star games, even though I'm thinking of like a couple of seasons that he had where he was in the low 200s. And when I think of professional hitters with the Pittsburgh Pirates, I go with the combination of catcher of Don Slott and Mike LaValier. Both of them.
I think Slott, too much power.
Wait, yeah. Is it LaValier or LaValier?
I don't even remember.
I've always wondered that.
I'm not ready to move away from the jocks. I think Jock Jones might have been a good professional hitter.
Oh, I like that. Shannon Stewart as well. I like what you're doing. I found the inspiration for Dottie in A League of Their Own. Now, her name was Bonnie Baker, so you see, she hit 286 lifetime and a tremendous fielder as well, commanded the catcher's position. I think Bonnie Baker is the new Queen of the Mountain.
Roy, is Chili Davis, I don't know why I'm asking
too
you
good,
this
Dan,
question.
Too much Chili power, Davis. But a great name, man. I'm so glad. Yeah, you just put a smile on my face.
He was too good? Chili Davis was too good?
Chili had 25, 30 homer years, I think.
Roy.
I owe Stugatz an apology, by the way. I thought, who was it that you mentioned that I yelled at you about? That
Mark
I said,
Loretta?
I didn't realize you were doing scrappy header instead of professional
totally
hitter.
Totally different.
So I owe you a public apology for that.
Accepted.
To be scrappy, you need to have multiple fantasy eligibility positions, right? You need to have at least five. Correct. You need to be locked in that util spot like Ryan Friel.
All right. Joan Figgins.
So let's think about this for a second. Billy, you hate the Braves. Who on the Braves? Because I want to narrow this down a little bit, and it might take us the whole week to do it. And I think it's the most important story that can be tackled by any media outlet this week. So on the Atlanta Braves, because I need to know who this looks like more, because it doesn't seem like we have consensus on yes, batting gloves, no batting gloves, dirty helmet, stance. It feels like stance we agree on. You can't have a weird stance. You got to have like a normal professional hitter.
Traditional.
Stance. Yeah. But who on the Braves, none of their first three hitters can be professional hitters. They're all too good. How about, I do think, when you look, Martin Prado from the Braves,
oh, wow.
when he came
damn,
to the Marlins.
Damn, that's great.
That's
great.
A pretty good one, right?
And that checks off like multiple fantasy positions.
Excellent.
Who on the Braves now, though, would be someone that you look at and say, and they might not have a candidate. I don't know.
I have a scrappy hitter from the Braves, Glenn Hubbard.
Why are you doing scrappy hitters?
I love that game.
No, that you can do that for Big Suey.
Scrappy hitters, we can do it another time, another day. It's too important a time.
Keep your eye on the ball.
Listen, I am, but Chris threw me off there. It's a great little Tommy Herr. Sorry.
No, Tommy Herr, I think, was too good.
He's got a lot of dirt on the helmet.
Tommy Herr had 100. Can you have 100 RBI? He had 100 RBI one season. Can you have 100 RBI and be a professional hitter?
With 8 homers, though, I mean.
I know, but I don't think you could be a professional hitter with 100 runs knocked in, can you?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, man, we started with Wes Helms and Russ Glode.
Paul O'Neill.
Too good.
Whoa. Paul O'Neill too good? And he's Howie Kendrick's good. Not too good? Well, Paul O'Neill's 288.
No, but Mike, the reason that one doesn't work is because Paul O'Neill is one of the few athletes pre-steroids who ever got better after the age of 30. So he became too good and it changed all his averages.
Guys, you're right. 5 all-star appearances. My bad.
Yeah. I'm torn here on Sean Casey.
I don't know what I'm doing here, but like growing up, I don't know if this anyone else felt this way, but I felt like the Braves led the league in players who owned tractors, right? But now it seems like they couldn't be further from that. Am I the only one that felt that growing up?
I mean, it was Brian McCann. Are you talking about, well, that was before that. You're talking about Chipper Jones.
The Blouser era.
Jesus.
Professional hitter.
No, he was professional for the position.
Not good enough. All right, so what was that team that had tractors? Who were the players you're thinking of there? Was the catcher Bruce Benedict? Was the catcher
Javi Lopez probably was a catcher.
Javi Lopez was on the
Lemke, Ryan Klesko. Who are you talking about?
Walt Weiss, Klesko.
Yeah.
Walt Weiss.
Jeff Francoeur.
Well, wasn't that the double play combination of Weiss and Lemke?
No, it was Lemke and Blouser.
That was early 90s.
Weiss played for the Braves.
I don't know when.
Did Walt Weiss play for the Braves?
Yeah, he had a tractor.
No recollection of that whatsoever.
So did Terry Pendleton.
Right. He won an MVP. TV. Yeah, he won an MVP for the Braves. 1993 is the height of Jeff Blouser. So I'm going to go to the 1993 Braves roster. Let's figure out who owned a tractor.
You guys, let's do that. We will do that. You guys said that, Chris and Stugatz. You guys made it MVP. TP, you guys made it from saying that at the same time.
You said. Walt Weiss made an all-star game as an Atlanta Brave. Three magical years in Atlanta.
All right. Steve Avery, tractor?
Yeah, but pitcher. Get him out of here. I can't even think about pitchers right now.
All right, I'll skip the pitchers.
Steve Avery, who were the closers? Bedrosian? Was
Mark Wohlers.
Alejandro Pena?
Wohlers.
He had a tractor, Wohlers.
Was it Wohlers or Pena was the closer for that team?
It was Wohlers. For the 93 team, it was Wohlers. They had Steve Bedrosian, and they had Kent Merker.
They went Wohlers Rocker, right?
Yes. Damon Berryhill, tractor?
Sounds like it.
I don't even know who you're talking
sounds
about.
Like
and
it.
It's like you made up a name specifically for the purposes of writing a tractor.
Billy, do you have the roster in front of you of those Braves that you associate with tractors?
Yeah, I'm looking at the 1995 Braves roster right now.
Right.
And let's see how Lemke, I think, maybe had a tractor. Blouser, possibly. Chipper, maybe. Ryan Klesko. Marquis Grissom. David
infield.
Justice.
What is that sound?
What's going on there?
What's
happening?
That's
my dog. He's playing with a Gatorade bottle right now, and he hadn't been doing that all morning, but he felt like now's the time to do that.
Billy, I feel like the infield had tractors, the outfield of Deion Sanders, Otis Nixon, David Justice, and Ron Gant, and Tony Tarasco did not have a tractor.
Deion, I could see with a tractor.
There had to be a schism in that locker room between the infield and the outfield. Those were two very different styles there. The right fielder's married to Halle Berry. The center fielder is Deion Sanders. And Ron Gant is someone who's never looked better than anyone else in a uniform.
And if you look at Ron Gant the wrong way, you are in big trouble. I mean, that guy will take you to the woodshed.
Now, it's my best pitch whenever we play these games, but I think it applies here. I'm going back to the well. Hal Morris, professional hitter.
That's pretty good.
Like it.
Just a good name. Just a good name.
That is pretty good.
Perfect for a professional. Not too flashy. Comes up, 300. That's it. I'm Hal.
I don't know what I'd do with Hal Morris. I think it was the first baseball card I ever remember getting, but he hits all the right notes, baby.
Well, what you do with Hal Morris is not want him on your team. Like, I think that's part of
the
what's
sads,
happening
Dan.
Here.
Look at the sads. I mean,
be careful.
He's a close to 300 hitter.
You give me 9 Hal Morrises, I'm winning a pennant.
No, you're not.
Probably not. You're probably right.
Put it
right
on the poll, Guillermo, at Leviturgia. Well, one of them's pitching if I give you
one
9.
One of them's pitching, and I don't have a great deal of faith in him.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Are you winning the pennant with 9 Hal Morrises?
304 career average.
I remember in the mid-2000s, I was making the argument that if you just give me 8 Jorge Cantus, I'll run that argument.
Well, he had that one season.
He had two. In the AL, he like finished top 10 in the AL MVP one year. But
Rays, right?
He was magical in that infield. The way that we talk about 90s baseball, we may talk about that Marlins infield with like Mike Jacobs in it because that was great.
Didn't Jorge Cantu have 40 home runs one season?
I think they went. What, did they go all 25? Billy, what was the
all of them went
mark?
30? Didn't all?
No,
I think Ugla.
That stupid car cutout in San Francisco. He hit the roof rack on one of those cars. Cantu did, costing him the 30th homer for this season, or everyone would have had it. It was Jacobs, Ugla, Cantu, and Hanley. I think.
Yeah,
right?
Hanley.
The season you're thinking of is the 28 homer, 117 RBI season that he had for Tampa. That's the big season.
I believe he finished top 10 MVP.
He finished 27th.
Hmm.